have an apology for the checkered thing. PAP was also apology for Honorable Robert King and Honorable Makaula. So I think we have to start our meeting, our presentation, and make sure that we meet the time, because we all know that this is a discussion in Parliament. So there is going to be a big demand for all of the members of the so I'm going to give the chair.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honorable Members. It's a joy to be here. It always is to come and account for the work that we do. As the Commission for Gender Equality, I think the delegation is known, maybe, but maybe for the purposes of the record. Yes, and a new member. My name is Thoko Mpumlwana. For the next 2 weeks, acting.
That's for the record.
Thank you very much.
What is Mgokhe, Commissioner? I'm based here in the Western Cape.
I'm Keke Zumaya, I'm the CEO for the Commission.
I'm Linda Musoma Pazi, I'm a Commission for the Commission.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I was just whispering to the CEO that maybe we should start from slide number one. We were trying to avoid the slides that have the mission vision because we've gone through it, but seeing that there's a new member, we thought that maybe we should just run through it. If the honorable members, we will really run through that up to slide number two. But before we do that, we just want to say that the CGE footprint is quite healthy. We are happy that in the SADC region, in Africa and internationally now, we have really matured. We have enough networks for us to play in the space of the Sustainable Development Number 5, which we will talk to. And we also want to alert members, I think the members were at the UNCSW, know that next year the theme is about rural women. And I thought this is one area where next year we just leave it with honorable members to say, please push the Department of Rural Development and all the others to make sure that we have a solid resource. Thank you, members. So the presentation will deal with the constitutional mandate and the strategic plan, and then we'll come to the annual performance plan and the highlight activities and June. We are mandated in terms of our constitution to promote respect for gender equality and protection and development and attainment of gender equality as a Chapter 9 constitution. And then our act, which was then after our constitution amended, gave us further powers to monitor, investigate, research, educate, lobby, advise Parliament and report on issues concerning gender equality. We are to monitor compliance to regional and international conventions. And we also have a mandate in terms of PEPUDA, the promotion of equality and prevention of unfair discrimination, which is the Equality Act, to take matters that relate to gender. And we can take them right up to the Equality Court, and we have actually done that in the past. We can also assist in that investigation and make recommendations to, in terms of PEPUDA, if people contravene PEPUDA. We can also, in terms of PEPUDA, ensure that because of the Bill of Rights that gave right to PEPUDA, we ensure that people read and protect the values of human dignity, equality, and freedom. Sometimes the issue of human dignity falls back and people are more concentrating more on equality and freedom and forget the fundamental issue of the dignity of a human being. And our obligation, therefore, is to strengthen in terms of the constitutional democracy. We then crafted a vision which has worked very well for us, which we probably to revise come next year, if it has to be revised, a society free from all forms of gender oppression and inequality. And we then took our mission from the mandate that was given to us in our legislation, and it's stipulated there, we will keep that. In terms of the work of the commission, the government's work of the commission, we have the plenary of commissioners, and we have governance oversight committees, legal and complaints led by the learned friend here, Advocate Mugogi. We have research and education, which informs the work that we do and some of the reports that we take before Parliament. We have strategic planning and annual report and monitoring and evaluation, which assists us to ensure that we plan, we report, and we monitor impact. We have human resources that really deals more with our strategic objective, number four. And then we have audit and risk. Commissioner McCarthy is in the audit and risk, and as well as finance. She is also in finance. And we then have information technology and communications, which is almost an obligation for everyone to, in terms of the way governance is run, to ensure that our technology works and our community. Then that's the last one on the strategic plan. As I said, this is now the fifth year. And so we will see if the vision, mission, and values will change post this last APP that we are tabling before honorable members. We will then start with the planning for the cycle that will be from 2018 to 2023. And we will look at the structure that we have. We will ensure that we enhance our monitoring and evaluation. And as a result, the CEO has gone back to school to go and study that to make sure we really do it right, and also management systems. Before I stop, honorable members, is just to state that it has now formally come before us that the matters from the Kada Asmal, if I were to say, report are back on the table. And the matter in particular that is on the table is amalgamation of some human rights bodies, the CG, I think, and CRL, those two, and the human rights. So that's a matter under discussion. The CG has a position, but finally, no, we don't write the constitution. So we are watching that space, and so that is what. And lastly, to say on my part that this will be my last meeting, my last presentation, and I come here to just thank everybody now in my individual capacity for a wonderful, wonderful time we had together. And we learned a lot. And I remember Honorable Tsoe with a branding. Every time she would say, we don't want to see the Constitutional Court. You're not Constitutional Court yet. You are CGE. All we want to see in your slides, CGE. And your documents are not the same. So thank you for all the input that you have. We've actually grown as an organization. We live an organization with a clean audit and running well. But obviously, with the new discussions, we'll have to do a lot of management of staff and anxieties, because obviously once that debate starts, people want to know, are we going to have our jobs? Is our mandate going to be protected? Is the gender agenda and women's agenda going to be subsumed into the generic human rights agenda? So those are some of the issues. And the commissioners were also saying there was a bill that was put on the table on remuneration. We had hoped that that bill will change remuneration. We live with remuneration having not changed. And I was laughing at them. I was saying, from where I will be, I will check if their remuneration will have changed. But that is on a lighter note. Thank you very much. Now I have the question to the CEO to present the strategic plan as well as the APP for the year 2017-2018. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think before the acting chairperson hands over to the CEO, and especially since she has already said her thank you and goodbye, kind of. No, the chairperson. Before she hands acting chairperson, before she hands over to the CEO. As you've said, your thank yous and goodbyes, I think that perhaps the committee should also take this time to thank you. This is only my second or third meeting with you guys, but before that I certainly did hear good reports about your organisation, and that I think the most important thing was that you were trying to do things right, and you were committed to do things right, and I think that that is quite important in itself. So I'll hand back over the chair to the chairperson of the committee to do the formal thank you, but I just thought I needed to initiate that. Thank you.
Thank you. Let me give Honorable Chair the opportunity.
Maybe you'll act for another month.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Standard. Anyway, we would like to thank you very much, ma'am, for being with us all this term. And I know that it's very painful for us to leave us in that way. But we know that as CGE, this is the organization that we are working very well, and you are our IDT, Chapter 9 institution. We know that although we are not working well with the department, but we know that with CGE, you are doing what the department is supposed to do, and you do it extremely, very hard in your limited resources. But we know that what we have done, you have made our work easy as members of parliament, because we are very proud of what you are doing on the ground. We know that the CGE, the the one that is always in every corner of this country. And so for us, for the members of the CGE to leave us anyway is very painful for this portfolio committee. But we are hoping that wherever you go, you will not leave us, but you might come back and be with us, and we will share some other information if we needed to from you. We are no longer going to bother you, but we are going to add some information if we needed to, and some assistance as this portfolio committee. We know you and Shosi, we are working very hard to make sure that CGE is what it is today because of you. So we would like to thank you very much for being with us. And we are saying that the others that are coming, we hope that they are going to be filling all the shoes, the big shoes that we have left for them. But thank you very much for being with us. And we wanted to say a happy days for you with your family, and hoping that you're also going to come back to CGE and advise them if any advice is needed from you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, honorable member. I think honorable members would be aware of the specific things that underlie our strat plan processes. As the deputy chair has indicated, we are now presenting the final year of our five-year strategic plan that started in 2013 and is ending now on the 31st of March 2018. As members will be aware, we do have a significant percentage of South Africa which is rural in nature, and there are specific challenges that are facing rural women, as much as we also look into some of the issues that are happening in the urban areas. Our strat plan is also espoused on the basis of recognition of women in the traditional sector, and the fact that they also continue to face specific challenges. And we also are trying very hard to ensure that women within, whether it's traditional sector, religious sector, and some of these rural communities are able to, you know, have their own economic independence, and that and are able to have exposure in terms of women's empowerment and social upliftment, as it were. And then in this current financial year, we will still continue. As we said, it's the last leg. We are not really changing anything to ensure that we have those particular programs that enhance our traditional sectors, our religious sectors, and our, also our other communities, whether in rural and some in the urban areas as well. We, as you will be aware, I mean, traditionally patriarchy has really been associated with the state, with family, household, and we do have these inequalities in these households, in these rural settings, in many other facets of our society. This therefore implies that it has been rooted both in private life as well as in public life of ourselves as people that are in this society. So our programs are also taking such methods into account. We are also informed by specific international conventions and regional protocols which are specifically looking at issues around gender equality, and therefore our work also gets informed by those. And obviously we have a roadmap as a country, the National Development Plan, and we take that into account as well whenever we put our APP and our plans together. And obviously we then look into some of the medium-term strategic framework and all the other processes that are in place that give us a sense of how we must plan and what are the kind of things that we must think about. I'm not going to get too much into, you know, the legislative framework that is there. As I indicated, obviously there's national, there's international that we then look into. Just to mention, we would still be, our programs are still going to be informed by CEDAW, the Convention on Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women. We will still be informed by the Beijing Declaration and Platform for Action. The Millennium Development Goals, obviously, which have now also been replaced by the 17 Sustainable Development Goals, which obviously has got about 169 targets that we must all be looking into. And specifically, for our own work, you would look at SDG Goal 5, which looks at achieving gender equality and empowering all women and girls, and the targets that are espoused by that particular goal. I'm not going to go through that. We have had many discussions and engagements on that, safe to say they are there. And as well, because it's important that we also have a footprint, as the deputy, as the acting chair has also indicated, within the Africa region as well. So we also do take into account the agenda that is there within Africa, and therefore we also take into account Agenda 2063 and all the other treaties that are attached to it, and specific things that they are trying to achieve within Africa as far as gender equality is concerned and participation of women and all that. We also have UN Resolution 1325, which is also very important. There have been quite a number of processes that we are involved in, because I think as a country we've never really had an action plan that is formally in place that fits and indicates in terms of what we need to do. So those are some of the things that we will be looking at or talking to. We know about the NDP. I'm really not going to get too much into that in terms of the responsibilities that are there and our work and also our monitoring of departments and the private sector also takes into account the specific issues that have been highlighted that needs to be achieved as far as our NDP is concerned. There are quite a number of priorities that are there, and we take those particular priorities into account. There are those that are specific as far as gender work is concerned. Our strategic objectives are still not going to change. As we indicated, this is the last year. It may just change at a point when we have a full complement of commissioners. That's when we'll start a process of engaging with various stakeholders to see whether our strategic objectives are still relevant, and we'll take that process forward. But strategic objective one, to ensure the creation and implementation of an enabling legislative framework, and of course it's got specific sub-strategies that are there to try and ensure that they support the strategic objectives. We firstly are trying to monitor and evaluate the promotion of gender equality and any relevant policies and practices in the private and public sector. We have specific processes that we've put in place where we engage with the private sector as well in terms of checking how far they are on some of this work. We have employment equity hearing, for instance, that we undertake, and we engage with various public sector the departments as well as the private sector specific companies that are listed in the JSC as well. To initiate and review for improvements the legislative framework in all spheres of government, we have an office here in Cape Town, and in that office we have what we have termed the parliamentary officer that then assists us and ensures that at a point when there are submissions or when there are specific acts that are being put in place, bills that are passed by Parliament, bills that are passed by the provincial legislature, that we are able to make an input into that from a gender perspective as the CGE. We also conduct periodic performance assessments of priority ministries, some of the state institutions and government departments, political parties and the private sector on implementation of applicable legislation and policies that impact gender equality. Just for the new member as well, just to highlight that as the Commission, we have put together an instrument, a web-based instrument, and we call it Gender Barometer. And for that instrument, what we do is every year we then submit it to various departments or private sector, and we have specific questions. We are just trying to see how far they are doing as far as gender mainstreaming is concerned. And we have reports that we then look into. We've been really concentrating on the private sector previously, and in this past financial year, two financial years, we've now concentrated as well within the private sector, and we've also done just finalized mining for this financial year that has just ended. So we'll still continue in terms of looking into administering that particular web-based instrument so that we can see how far everybody is as far as gender mainstreaming is concerned. We also look into political parties, and we had quite a number of reports that we put together in terms of women's participation and women's leadership within the political sphere. And as well, what we do each year when there's going to be either local government elections, then we engage with the various political parties on the basis of the thick report that we have done on women's participation within the political arena. And we remind many parties at a point when they go into conferences that they must always remember gender equality and women's, you said it, 50-50, not me. So those are some of the processes and the things that we do as far as that is concerned. We evaluate implementation and effectiveness of our national justice facilities for gender discrimination. We take into account that we have put as a country specific facilities that are there to try and ensure that they help women, whether it's courts, we have equality courts, we have maintenance courts, we have quite a number of courts that affect women and gender equality in general, and therefore we monitor those cases. And what we do is we have reports, which reports we then get to engage with the various clusters in government in terms of what our recommendations are, and then we follow through on those just to ensure that they then take them forward to ensure that some of these justice facilities are actually working much better than they are and are able to serve us as a country. And then we also convene direct dialogues with the relevant policy makers at national and provincial level on recommendations to promote gender equality. As we undertake our research, we produce research reports, and with those research reports we take into account that it is always difficult for policy makers to be able to read a huge 60-page or more research report. And what we then do with those research reports, we create what we call a policy dialogue, which is a smaller summary that highlights the methods that we have used, that highlights the findings that we have, and that highlights the recommendations. And we take those, we put those together out of the report, and then we then get to have meetings, hold meetings with various policy makers in provinces as well as in national departments. We try to target the DG's forums, we target the HOD's forums in provinces and all that. about. Strategic objective two, to protect and promote gender equality by engaging with relevant stakeholders to educate and raise awareness on issues of gender equality, challenge patriarchal perceptions and stereotypes and take action against infringement of gender rights. This is our protect strategic objective, where we do our legal work whenever anybody has got any gender discrimination. This is where, this is the strategic objective where a legal department takes homage on as we investigate various discrimination complaints that we have. Our act also allows us to do some of the investigations out of our own accord. So in some instances, we also do not have to wait for somebody to bring a gender discrimination case to us. But when we see, we pick up on the media or anywhere, then we can also investigate that on our own accord. To identify investigations of systemic violations on gender rights in the public and private sector, we do have investigations that we take that are systemic in nature, that when we look, it's a systematic issue. So we also do try and sit and look into those. We've had quite a number. We had a health one, we had a sex work one, and the like in the previous financial year. We also develop a coordinated program to promote gender equality. This is where we try as much as possible to have thematic engagement, whether it's traditional leaders, whether it's the religious sector, whether it's LGBTI communities and all that. So this is where we try and ensure that we then look into various things and see how and which provinces are going to do what particular activities. To initiate interventions for sustainable development and promotion of gender equality by addressing violations in social, cultural, political, economic, security, and human rights dimensions. And for this particular work, we've come up with a new program that we are now trying, that we piloted in the last, towards the end of the last financial year, the latter end of the last financial year, and this is where we are now gearing to workshopping and training municipalities on SDGs, on NDP and the like. We feel that they are an interface as far as service delivery is concerned, and we think that if they could take into account the gender biases and all the other issues that are contained as far as gender equality is concerned, that their programs will be able to then help on the ground as well. So that's what we are now gearing towards. We are going to heighten that particular process in this financial year. It started in the last financial year. And of importance for us is also the sub-strategy that talks to collaboration with organs of state, civil society, and other institutions for the effective development, protection, promotion, and attainment of gender equality. I think when we engage on our budget, we have forever been engaging with this particular committee in terms of the limited budget that we have. So this is a most important sub-strategy for us, because it actually helps us to ensure that we collaborate with other like-minded institutions and ensure that the work gets done without us, you know, just putting our hands up and saying we don't have enough money. And this is where it kind of really helps to ensure that we reach the breadth and depth of South Africa. If you look at FAIR, just for you specifically, we are have a presence in all the provincial, in all the provinces. However, mostly we are in the metropolitan cities, and when we look at our structure, you find that in an office we have about 6-5 people, and really there are two people that are really the professional people that are doing the work. We have a legal officer in each of the provinces, one legal officer and one educational outreach officer in the, and we take into account that some of our provinces are really vast, and it would really be impossible for one person to be able to reach the breadth of the provinces. So we really try as much as possible to sign MOUs and work with like-minded institutions, civil societies, in the on the ground, community-based organizations. Those are
our strongholds. Those are the people that we really work closely with that help us to be able to then reach and stretch the little budgets that we have to ensure that we have a proper reach. Then the last service delivery strategic objectives is the one that looks into monitoring state compliance with regional and international conventions and covenants, which have been ratified by the Republic and relating specifically to the objects and the work of the Commission for Gender Equality. Our Act, the CGE Act is very clear to say that we must be able to monitor compliance of international instruments, on international instruments, and be able to come to this Parliament and give Parliament or advise Parliament how we are doing as a country. And therefore, we took that strategic objective directly from the CGE enabling legislation. And what we normally do is to then conduct annual reviews and audits so that when the state puts their reports on the table, we are able to then mirror and say, is that report really what we found on the ground? So we look into, we get our own information independently of government, and when they then put their own state party reports, then we assess them and review and check whether what they have reported is indeed what is happening on the ground. So that's what that is all about, and obviously then we try and interact with many of the stakeholders, including Parliament and everybody else in terms of what we find. We also have strategic objective 4 that is more inward looking. It's just there to ensure that we build an effective, efficient, and sustainable institution that will be able to fulfill its constitutional mandate. So it's got all the sub-strategies that are talking about issues around governance, financial management, ensuring that we have a proper IT and communications and HR strategies and all that. So that's more of an internal looking sub-strategy. I've just tried to summarize. I know that the ACP is with Parliament, the actual ACP document, and therefore we've just also tried to summarize and indicate some of the specific things that we'll be doing under the strategic objectives that I've highlighted and I've tried to explain. Under strategic objective 1, we have been doing a series of employment equity hearings that I've indicated. And what we then do is to ensure that as much as we have engaged with you in terms of the hearings, but we keep checking with you how far you have done as far as our recommendations and our findings are concerned. So each year we look back to those that we have already held hearings and put a report together and we then question them just to check how far they are in terms of the recommendations that we made and the findings thereon. So we will be doing that as well in this financial year, doing follow-up consultative meetings on the 2016-2017 employment equity reports that we released and check how far they are as far as implementation of those recommendations that we have highlighted are. We have been also targeting institutions of higher learning as far as our employment equity hearings are concerned, gender transformation hearings that we do with universities. We've done, due to budgetary constraints, we have not been able to do all at once, so we've been doing them piecemeal. And in this current financial year, in the last financial year, we did UCT, we did VIP, we did KZN as well. So in this current financial year that we are starting, we'll be engaging with these universities. We are doing Free State, we are doing UJ, and we are doing Stellenbosch as well. So those are the three that we will now be engaging with afresh as far as that those is concerned. we will be still utilizing our gender barometer in terms of going out. I know that we've been having quite a number of engagements. In the last financial year, we did a few mining companies, and I know there's a push that we try and still continue with mining, or otherwise try and concentrate on the banking sector. So we are still trying to see, we're still trying to just put a final touch in terms of specifically who will be targeting within that. But those are the two high on our list as far as the gender barometer is concerned. And obviously we will still continue in terms of doing discussions on legislation that gets passed either by parliament or some of the provincial legislatures. Assessment report on women's representation and women's decision making in the traditional sector. We held quite a number of hearings within the traditional settings. I think we changed our processes and we thought the hearing seems to have much more impact than when we do, you know, dialogues here and there. So we've been doing specific hearings, and there are specific things that are coming out, and we want to have a proper consolidated report that we will then be able to engage with all the various stakeholders. We've been engaging with COPTA as far as some of the issues that are coming out are concerned in some of these traditional sectors. Consolidated research report on women in correctional services. We've highlighted it because it's going to be a new thing that we will be looking into. I think we've been monitoring, you know, we've been coming up with a research reports. We've looked at the victim's charter previously and the obligations that are there, and we've been having quite a number of reports. And one of the things that is really coming out specifically as far as correctional facilities are concerned, and looking into issues of LGBTI communities, is one of the things that we're coming out very strongly out of the, you know, the victim's charter report. So we want to take that forward and be able to come. There is a policy gap. Let me just be frank. There is a policy gap as far as how we do in women, LGBTI, as far as you know, correctional facilities are concerned. And we're hoping that this will also help with other sectors as well. I'll give an example. We had an engagement with one shelter, one of the shelters that are run by Social Development, where I think a transgendered victim was then taken into this particular shelter, and probably nobody even realized that this person is actually transgender. And you know, some of the women in the shelter then found out, and then it just created kind of a there was this havoc, you know, in terms of how do we deal with it. When we have a transgender person that comes in here, transgender, you're a man, but you identify as a woman, so you know there were quite a number of things. So we think that there's a serious policy gap, and we must be able to come up with something that will then engage. We'll have to engage government and say how do we do and how do we deal with this thing. And so it goes with correctional facilities. If you incarcerate a person that identifies in that particular fashion, what do you do? Do you put them in the women's cells? You put them in the men's cells? If I identify as a man and I'm a woman, you know, so those things need to really, we need to have conversations around those things and see how we build up some sort of policy around that. We'll still continue with an evaluation report on monitoring of courts. We monitor courts, and then we then each year engage with the Justice Cluster. In terms of what are the issues that we've picked up, and see how they can then take those particular issues forward. So we'll still continue doing that, and we're still hoping as well, like we did in the past, to engage the committee as well on some of the reports so that if the committee also is able to then engage with all the other departments, then they can also be in a position to take that work forward. We'll still continue with dialogues with the HOD forums in the provinces and also here at national level, based on the research studies that we have conducted and come up with in this financial year that has just ended. So we'll still continue with that. As far as strategic objective 2 is concerned, we are still on course as far as our complaints are concerned. We will still also undertake our outreach, advocacy, and legal clinics that we conduct in all the various provinces, just to ensure that we reach as many communities as possible as far as this work is concerned. And for this financial year, the systemic investigations, some of the systemic investigations that are here are still continuing from the last financial year. They have not as yet been finalized. We are still going to deal with the, we are dealing with the mining sector. We still had a report on gender transformation of the judiciary, and it's still going to be important that we put it on our radar and still push and see how far they are doing as far as that work is concerned. We are quite happy to see the judiciary holding a conference in this current financial year about 3 weeks ago, a month, and we are hoping that some of the issues that we have highlighted will really be taken into consideration. Decriminalization of sex work, we're still waiting. I saw not so long ago the Justice Department accounting, and they've indicated once again that the paper will be out, and we are still awaiting that paper. I think they said it's still in cabinet. They said it has been signed off by cabinet, so we are still waiting. I'm hoping that is, when a week or two, when they said that now this is finally a paper that we will see, and then we'll see how to then take that particular investigation forward, and we still have our maternal health continuing. For strategic objective 2, as far as material development is concerned, we are still going to continue. We've been piecemeal really trying to come up with resource packs and simplified materials so that as we engage with the municipalities and all the various stakeholders that we train as far as SDGs are concerned, that they get really simplified resource packs that actually unpack some of the targets and some of the issues that they would need to do as far as this work is concerned. So we'll be continuing to do that. And we will be conducting 9 gender mainstreaming workshops, implement a coordinated education program on gender mainstreaming with targeted municipalities. So we'll still continue. We did a pilot, and what came out of that particular pilot, as we reported in the third quarter, was the indication that not all municipalities are on the same level as far as this work is concerned. So we are now trying to ensure that we have we engage, and then we have those targeted workshops depending on at what level a municipality is. We'll be developing a legal resource book on gender equality legislation. We just want to put a simplified compact because we have a feeling that there are some compacts that are out there, but they are not simplified enough. I think as a commission, back then when we started, we used to have a very simplified manual, which we used to call the Women's Working Manual. And so we are looking into having also something like that, reviving that, but also having something that also has a proper resource book so that people know what to do as far as some of the gender equality legislation that we have are concerned. We still are hoping to improve in ensuring that we use the public media platforms to disseminate gender equality, education and information. This is where we have our radio slot. Every year we sign an MOU with the National Forum for Community Radio Stations, and that MOU is all about ensuring that they give us slots at cheaper rates at community level, in vernacular language where people are able to actually understand us, and we talk about our mandate and some of the issues that are coming out in some of these communities as far as gender equality is concerned. And we are still on course in still continuing doing that particular work. We're going to have stakeholder engagements and intervention programs on gender violations initiated with traditional leaderships and religious sector. And this is where we are still going to heighten some of our hearings as far as the traditional sector is concerned. We've had them, but we're going to heighten that particular process, but as well we now want to also target the religious sector as well, as far as that is concerned. We'll have stakeholder engagements that we normally have in provinces. And then under strategic objective 3, we will have our assessment reports like we normally do, usually do on regional and protocols and charters. We'll be looking at how far government is as far as localizing the SDGs is concerned. We will be looking into the African Charter and Human and People's Rights. And then we'll also be having consultative meetings with stakeholders on the findings and recommendations that we have on our Africa Gender Development Index report. Just for members to remember that the AGDI is a specific instrument that is utilized by AU. Specifically, we've been working with the UNECA on this one in ensuring that we kind of have a report that gives us a sense from quantitative and qualitative point of view how far we are as far as gender equality is concerned. So we will now be starting our engagement on what we found and the recommendations that are there. We have had the first engagement where we had all the most of the critical departments of SSA and all the UN agencies on that report. From there, we will still have specific things that we undertake as far as our strategic objective 4 is concerned. We, in the past 2 financial years, we have revamped our IT infrastructure, and the idea is then to ensure that we develop a proper plan to ensure that we have improvements and maintenance plans that are put in place. Our HR strategy implementation and all the other processes that we do as far as the media is concerned, and also concerning skills development to ensure that we take our personnel through a training plan specifically with some of the CETAs and all that. We have been on course as far as our branding is concerned. We just couldn't put a lot of money as far as branding. Branding can sometimes be very expensive. We've been having engagements with various stakeholders in terms of branding of public spaces and all that. So we'll still be continuing with that particular work, and we'll be having our comprehensive campaign. We have had engagements with this committee on One Woman, One Hectare, and we still feel that it's still important that we still are on course and looking into the fact that some of the international arenas will be looking at rural women and all that in the next financial year. So that's just a summary, Chair and Honourable Members, in terms of the work that we will be undertaking as the Commission. We still believe that it's important. I mean, the CFO will be talking to our budget now, and I think we still feel that it's important that we still try to create as much synergies as possible with like-minded institutions because of budgetary constraints. And we are now really going to try, this is why we are also trying very hard to ensure that we seek to work with traditional leadership as well, even more than we used to, and also the religious sector, so that we ensure that in our communities, hopefully we'll be able to eradicate gender discrimination. With that, Chair, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable members, the budget basically directly links with the programs that the CEO has presented. This is but basically a monetary, a financial plan mirroring exactly what has been previously presented. The contents includes there's a framework given of our legislative environment. We're going to skip that, only to emphasize the fact that for this particular year, financial year 2017-2018, our baseline budget has been increased by 8 million from an original 69.9 million to 78.3 million. But the background around it is that in the preceding financial years, our institution, like other departments, have suffered budgetary reductions. The combined amount was 8 million then for the past for those two financial years. So we are basically recovering from a very deep end that we find ourselves in. But as well, I think to emphasize the issue around the Commission's funding still remains a challenge. I think substantively there have been engagement with this committee and other fora, and in other fora, we still have got challenges. So in order for us to translate the plans, strategic plans and strategic activities that have been presented, we had to do a lot of prioritization, optimization. So the shoestring still short. We are still overstretching the rent. So this budget basically is really a compromise, a product of negotiations, exchanges that have been done. And in closing, the CEO has indicated as well that we also consider strategies to derive synergies from partners. So we partner, we basically try and make sure that we can do more with the little that we have. So on slide number 7, basically we highlighting the considerations basically that have been taken into account as we are doing this budget. We consider that like for anything else, prices will be increasing, so we have factored in 5% inflation, which is still within the official target range. We have also anticipated an increase on COE at 6%. Already, I think with benefit of hindsight, we know that the COE, compensation of employees adjustment for the 2017-2018 financial year has increased by a larger percentage, 7.3 versus the 6.3. Already that puts us in a budgetary or spending pressure. And the nature of our business model as well, I mean, it says that we're using much more of services of professionals. We rely largely on human resources. And then if you look deeper into the budget, you realize that one of the key cost drivers would be COE.
Mm-hmm.
The details are provided in the presentation. On slide number 8 is basically a summary of how monies have been allocated. SO1 to 4 are basically the activities that have been outlined in the earlier presentation. There are also further slides that delineate how the money has been allocated within a sub-strategy. Overall, the allocation for the year is 78.3 million. And the details pertaining to that will be on the next slide. Itemized budget, we can see we've spoken about the compensation of employees. One other key driver is our audit fees, the first line at 3%. The office cleaning maintenance plant, as has already been indicated, we've got offices in every other province. And therefore, I mean, to sustain those offices, we have set aside 2.3 million. A key driver there would be direct expenditure like water and light. We know that energy is much more expensive, so is electricity for the offices. The next other significant line, spending line, is on professional services. There we're including services from third-party providers, such as consulting for strategic planning. We know that in the up and coming or during the new financial year, we'll be looking into reviewing our existing long-term strategy. And legal fees, because our mandate also requires of us, specifically PEPUDA, to approach courts, and then there are instances in which we will have to rely on outside legal opinion or legal services. The other significant expenditure to mention is travel and accommodation, also driven by the fact that we are geographically present in every other province, and then therefore, and as well, I think we reach out to people, and we've got to travel. So 7.3 million has been set aside exactly to support those particular activities. And so it goes with vehicle expenses. It's for us to reach grassroots in executing our work. The last line, basically, venues catering, as it were, we're dealing with social issues. We engage in dialogues. We need to be communicating to communities, and therefore, to enable us, we have set aside 1.2 million so that we can have instances in which there are forums created for communicating the serious social challenges that are being faced by the country. Lastly, takeaway point from this slide is that you'll see in the presentation there's a listing of our capital expenditure requirements, and that listing by far surpasses the 498,000 rand that we have. So we need those items. I think most of the items are quite critical for sustenance and even improvement into the future, but they're there. On slide 22, there's an itemized requirement for capital expenditure. So unfortunately, with the budgetary constraints, we could only set aside around 500,000. Maybe come to the next slide before. This slide basically summarizes the picture. There's a graphical rendition of how expenditure is spread, or the budget is spread. We can see that COE is big. However, when you look into maybe the below table, one will also note the figures indicated for according to economic classification and per program. And in the overall, what we can see is that around 58.7 million or 75% of the allocation goes towards what the enabling legislation requires of the CG to do, the CG Act. It goes to main service delivery program and also the commissioner's program. Our administration program represents in this budget 25% of the full allocation. I think the slides are difficult to go to the previous one. The previous slide, this slide basically is just a spread of how resources have been allocated for each sub-strategy per strategic object within a strategic objective. So it is details for members to refer. We can take questions there on. We can maybe skip. And we go to risk management. We can skip the numbers and then go to risk management. Without emphasizing, we're quoting in this slide to say that the only alternative to risk management is crisis management. And then PFMA as well under section 38 appreciates that risk management is a critical aspect of governance and running of an organization. So we therefore as an institution have we are highlighting a number of key risks, strategic risks, and by the way, these risks are also relevant in as much as they've been tabled with Parliament together with the long-term five-year strategy. And they still remain relevant for purposes of our current APP. Quickly running through them, the first one linked to strategic objective number one. We see on the first one to say that there's an imperfect synchronization of monitoring plans of government. In the introduction, the CEO as well as the deputy chair or the acting chair have indicated that our programs are interlinked with key strategic plans of the country, NDP, including within the Agenda 2063, MTSF, and the like. So there have got to be space or even innovation to ensure that there's a proper alignment of what we do. We try from the CG side to ensure that we link our plans to the overall grand plans of the country and the continent. And the other identified risk basically has got to do with the support, basically, because for gender equality to be met, that aspiration to be met, everybody has got to be involved. Mm-hmm. So we are just indicating that outside of the CGE, within the private sector and public sector, there isn't much strategic consideration of gender mainstreaming into the main programs. The second strategic objective we have identified as well two risks, but some of the risks will be overlapping. I mean, across strategies, inadequate resources. We can overemphasize the need of a budget extension. We can skip. I think I'll consider that members has also gone through a number of this particular risks. And coming to the final risks that have been identified linked to the strategic objective number four. Our programs as well, I think in this day and age, IT technology becomes relevant. And then we have a risk relating to IT. Our business is also dependent on that, will forever be dependent on that. So we have identified as such, funding we have spoken about, and leadership generally across for anything, leadership and management capacity becomes a critical ingredient to success. So have been identified. We do have mitigating strategies for all these things. So I'm basically leaving the details for question and answer session. And underneath the presentation, we have annexures for further information. These annexures are linked to what has been previously reported or presented. And on that note, Chairperson, thank you.
Thank you very much, CFO and CEO. Members, I'm going to allow no questions now. Just 3 minutes break, a fresh break, and we'll ask questions after that. Thank you very much. I'm acting chair. Just like the deputy chair.